welcome to a special edition of Formula Girls. We have a formula guy here, but first I'm with Molly, senior formulations chemist, and then we have Dennis on the phone.
Hello.
Dennis is our business manager for personal care. He used to be up in the lab all the time with Molly.
Mm-hmm.
We got pretty close.
Yeah, there's a few of us business managers. We're category managers for the different parts of the business that we manage, but we're all technical product managers, and I like to open with that usually with folks so they understand that I am a chemist and I do chemistry stuff.
You do chemistry stuff. Okay, so today we're just going to talk about sultane amphoterics, and we like to offer these as a replacement for betaines, and we have an extensive line of sultanes to kind of pair with a betaine replacement in case you're using that in your formula. Now, Dennis and Molly, why do we want to steer clear from betaines?
Well, I mean, there's a number of different approaches to this. You know, I think sultanes are good chemistry in their own right, and I prefer to lead with that. The fact that you can get them at higher solids, they're offered preservative-free, they have good compatibility to soap and hard water, lower EWG scores, things like that. But kind of the other side of that is that there are a lot of people coming to us asking about this chemistry because they're concerned about the dichloroacetic acid in betaines, and dichloroacetic acid is a Prop 65 listed chemical that currently does not have any safe harbor limit. So if it's detectable in a finished product, it should be notified to the consumer that it contains it.
And right now, and Prop 65 is a California thing, so it's not nationwide.
Right. Very specific to California and the sources that they draw from to determine which ingredients are part of their Prop 65 list are unique to them. They use, you know, some international and recognized sources for that information, but in some cases, the thresholds for inclusion are somewhat different. In some cases, things will be listed without any caveats with regards to what the route of entry or why those things might be potentially hazardous might be. So. It's unfortunately something that drives a lot of the cosmetic industry because California is such a large market.
So you like to work with these because they are higher solids, but how, and Molly can jump in here, do you like working with sultanes in the lab more than betaines? Are they easier to work with?
I wouldn't say easier, but they're definitely just as easy. I mean, they come in that same liquid form. They're just as water soluble. And you can add them the same step in the procedure that you would a betaine. You only really need to change the use level. The sultanes, because they're at that higher activity level, you can use them at a lower level in the formula.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that you could switch from one to the other. You know, they are somewhat different chemistry in terms of the anionic functional group. And despite that, if you just correct for the activity level, you really get very similar performance between the betaine and the sultane. So transitioning from one to the other is made quite easy.
So, and then touch a little bit on the environmental working group that you mentioned.
The EWG, or Environmental Working Group, is a NGO that does their own kind of safety assessments and tries to gauge human and environmental impacts of a variety of different things. They have their own database that they rank consumer raw materials for cosmetics, and they score things basically from a 1 to 10 scale, or 1 to 9, and 1 being the best and the highest number being the worst. And they have their own certification scheme now for finished products as well. And a lot of people come to us looking for ingredients that score either a 1 or a 2, because those get the green ratings within their system there. And so they're looking for something that's going to be relatively benign. And as it happens, the coco metoprolyl hydroxysulfane has a 1, whereas the functionally equivalent. Co-chemical propyl butane has a 4. So it allows formulators to get into that lower tier ingredient without any issues again.
So the three that we kind of promote a lot is our Choleteric CBS and our Choleteric CBS HP. Those are kind of like the basic ones. The HP version is glycerin free. And then we also have the Choleteric LMHS, which is the loramidyl propyl sultane. Can you kind of explain the difference between those, or do people care?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different reasons why you might choose one over the other. The three products are mainly differentiated by feedstocks and performance that you get from those, but they're also very similar in that they're primarily around the cocoa distribution, or, you know, C12, C14 ratios are similar between the three different variants. The differences are kind of what's at the edges in terms of the composition of the alkyl distribution. And so the CBS from the whole coconut oil is really kind of the standard product, suits most people's needs. And the CBS HP is a higher performance version that gives you a higher viscosity response if you have sluggish systems. And the LMHS is also optimized for enhanced viscosity as well as enhanced color.
So, Dennis, would you say that for people that already have a formula that they're happy with, they should switch over to its sultane equivalent, and those that are maybe struggling with viscosity or performance could switch over to one of the more high performance grades?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the approach to take. If you're using kind of a standard grade whole cut butane to start, you're going to want to choose the CBS. If you're using a high-performance product, or if you're using like a loramidyl propyl butane, then you go to the CBS HP or the LMHS.
And then there are some other benefits too, maybe with switching to sultanes, like their ability to disperse lime soap and how they function in a lower pH range.
Yeah, the lime soap aspect is something that's pretty interesting. The carboxylate that's present in the butane can be susceptible to hard water in terms of performance. And then also the lime soaps refers to calcium salts of fatty acids. And even if you're not formulating with a soap per se, you may be formulating with a raw material that contains some fatty acid in it, like an isothionate. And those lime soaps can often give decreased performance, or they can inhibit the feel of the product. And so having the lime soap dispersion aspect helps the product overall in terms of performance behave a lot better. Also, the carboxylate is going to protonate at a higher pH than the sulfonate does. And so you get a lot broader pH performance with the sultanes versus a butane.
And that would be great for, you know, formulators that are wanting to do pH-balanced products for skin, or using preservatives that have to be in that range to be active, right?
Right. You're not going to see a huge drop-off or change in performance as you go to the lower pH. Often, you can even see some enhanced performance. It just depends on the formulation that you're working with.
So our sultanes are a little bit more greener than the competition, and that's because we use a natural epichlorohydrin, right?
Yeah, the natural epi is a big advantage for us in terms of providing a better sustainability product to our customers. So not only do you get the advantage of moving to a higher active material, something that's, you're shipping less water, which has a good environmental footprint, but we're also using fewer black carbons or non-sustainable or petrochemical carbons in the molecule. And so we have an overall green carbon footprint that's better in the molecule than some of our competitors do, because we're using fairly uniquely a bio-based intermediate that our competitors mostly don't. Traditionally, it's been a petrochemically based material, but our bio-based product gives us a really nice sustainability aspect to the product.
Black carbons. That doesn't sound so great.
Yeah. Sounds fossil little... fuels are bad.
Sounds a little scary. So talking about sustainability, we recently launched two new saltines. One is from a babassu oil, and the other one is from hemp seed oil. Because people are trying to get away from palm-derived and coconut-derived materials. Why did we pick these two oils?
Yeah, they each have a different story in terms of their sustainability, and each have a different advantage towards the chemistry. So definitely in terms of the palm situation, there's a lot of concern around palm oil and palm oil derivative being incorporated into cosmetic products. In the same aspect, things that are very adjacent to palm are very closely scrutinized. And babassu oil has a very green story around it, very good sustainability aspect. It's doesn't come from the same region of the world as the palm oil or the coconut palm. It's from South America. It's a different species of palm. And those trees grow wild there. They're indigenous to that area, whereas the palm oil that's grown in the Far East is not indigenous there. It's actually indigenous to Africa. You have a native plant that's harvested locally, and it's done sustainably, and it's really a net benefit to the local economy and to the environment there. So not only that, but the babassu oil is actually quite similar in terms of its, again, fatty acid distribution compared to coconut. And so the performance of the babassu is very similar to coconut, makes it very easy to transition from one feedstock to the other. On the other hand, the hemp seed oil is a completely different beast altogether. It has its own unique sustainability story in that the hemp plant is very easy to cultivate, grows in a lot of different environments, especially in poor soils, places that are could be traditionally difficult to harvest a seed oil plant in. But the major difference between the hemp and the coconut babassu that we've been talking about is that the hemp seed oil is a primarily long chain fatty acid distribution. So it has a lot of oleic, linoleic fatty acid. And so that saltine that we make from it, instead of being primarily a foaming product, is really more of a viscosity boosting emollient type product. And so it could be considered in the formulation as an amide replacement or something to help build up viscosity of sulfate free systems that, as everybody knows, are difficult to get the right viscosity with to begin with.
Okay, Dennis, so what's going on with the hemp? Because, you know, all these companies are worried about THC or CBD. And so when you bring up hemp, they're just like, they kind of freak out a little bit.
Right. So industrial hemp is the same species of plant as the cannabis sativa that people smoke for its psychoactive properties. But it's defined by having a low THC content, and THC being the psychoactive substance in the cannabis. There's been a gray area for a while around hemp and cannabis and medicinal marijuana and so on and so forth. Recently, with the 2018 Farm Act, we had some additional clarity around the ability to use, cultivate, and market products from industrial hemp throughout the United States. So there is no longer any barriers in the U.S. to using industrial hemp and its byproducts. A lot of other countries, of course, have been ahead of us on this, and have regulatory systems already in place and still regulate around the THC content, looking for products with lower than a certain amount. And so we, you know, work with our suppliers to make sure that our hemp seed oil definitely meets the criteria to make sure that it's industrial hemp grade and it's not going to have any of the bad stuff in it. It's worth noting that the THC and the CBD active substances don't actually come from the hemp seeds, which is what we're getting the hemp seed oil from. They come from different parts of the plants. Actually, all the fine hairs at the surface of the stems and flowers kind of excrete this lipophilic substance that's the THC or CBD. And again, different cultivars can be selected that are express higher levels of either the THC or the CBD. But the main thing to note is that the hemp seed oil is not really going to contain a significant amount of either. So people that are looking for hemp seed oil or hemp seed oil derived products to provide the CBD benefit aren't going to get that out of that.
All right. Just making sure so everybody's clear.
Don't sound too disappointed.
So then our last sultane that I just wanted to talk about really briefly was Colateric CHGL, which we have taken our Colateric CBS and then we've blended Colonial Monolaurin into it. Because Colonial Monolaurin is like in a pellet form, right? What would you call that? A pastille?
Yeah.
So, and that can be a little bit difficult to get into a formulation, right?
You do have to heat it to get it to go in. So with it being in the CHGL, you can just add it cold mix to the formula. It makes it a lot easier.
And then this one also has like super high foaming and viscosity performance, right?
Yeah. So what I point out in the data that we developed is mainly that it can really boost up formulations that are very slow to build viscosity, that have poor salt response, to dramatically reduce the amount of salt that it takes to get to target viscosity.
And then you're also getting all those benefits of monolaurin in there, right?
Yeah, monolaurin in itself is a high-value ingredient, and it's offering a lot of different things into the blended product. It does help reduce the amount of salt that it takes to get to your target viscosity. So it's enhancing the viscosity performance in that product. We have some model formulations that we put together that even up to 5% salt, they weren't really moving much. You had to get them up to 7 or 8% to see some significant viscosity. But we could cut that back pretty dramatically by using the monolaurin in there. It's one of those ingredients that a little bit goes a long way. And so you have to be careful with the amount of the product that you use to get that effect. Another benefit of the monolaurin is that it also has some antimicrobial benefits. And those can help enhance the preservation of a formulation, help you reduce reliance on some of the traditional biocides that you might include or preservative ingredients that you might be including in the formula. And every hurdle that you add for those bugs is definitely going to help enhance your resistance to microbial growth. And that's a big concern for a lot of green formulators because the number of acceptable preservatives has been dwindling fairly dramatically, especially over the past couple of years. As people move away from one thing to the next, often the thing that they select as a replacement isn't always necessarily better or safer. And so we saw that, you know, with the isothiazolinones as people moved away from parabens and formaldehyde donors, which were, you know, fairly well tolerated. Certainly parabens are completely non-allergenic for the most part. Formaldehyde donors did have some minor sensitization issues, but then we moved to the isothiazolinones, which when they were used in small amounts in just a few formulations, didn't really have too much of an impact. But when a lot of people started using them, then we saw that they are in a small population somewhat allergenic. A lot of people are using them now, so small numbers get magnified fairly quickly.
So, do you think you'll explore any other different types of oils with it to make a saltine from?
Yeah, we're always looking at new and innovative feedstocks. We have some projects in the works, looking at a variety of new different things. I would say probably none of those are super imminent in terms of product launch. I think in the nearer term, we're actually looking to replace some other types of traditional chemistries with a similar functional chemistry. So, because of the dichloroacetic acid concerns, we get a lot of people asking us about the amphoacetates and is there anything that we can switch away for those? And we are looking in that area at, the similar functional chemistry from imidazolines rather than from the amines or amidoamines. And so an amphosaltane type product will be next in the lineup.
All right, well, thanks, Dennis.
Thank you guys. It's a pleasure.
But in the meantime, if anyone has a question about our saltines or needs help formulating, you can shoot us an email at info@colonialchem.com. And once again, I'm Christine. Here's Molly.
What, do I say goodbye now?
Yes. Just say goodbye.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Later.